19th.
Happy May 19th, everybody. It's that special time of year that the Big Red Machine Kane can think back to when his parents perished in that awful house fire. Back when he was a little red machine. It is Wednesday, May 19th, 2010, episode 110. The sound off here on SCScoops.com. Very rare weekday edition, but I figured, you know, May 19th has become something of a wrestling holiday. You know, a day of remembrance, if you will. It was also the day that Kane's movie See No Evil came out, back in 2006. Hell of a promotion they did on that movie. Got a couple of things I want to get to here. Couldn't wait till the weekend. Had to talk about it now. Talk about Raw. Very eventful edition of Raw, actually. Commercial-free. And I got some thoughts on NXT. You know I do. If you follow me on Twitter last night, I was waiting with bated breath when I read the spoilers for what was yet to come on the Sci-Fi Channel last night. I was not disappointed with what I was disappointed in one thing. But the actual beatdown of Michael Cole, which the only thing I'm sorry about is that it wasn't more hardcore than it was. But all good stuff. Get to that in a second. Why don't we talk about Raw a little bit here. Toronto, Canada, May 17th was the date that Bret Hart had set with WWE to be his swan song for now. This was going to be Bret Hart's final WWE contracted, or actually we're not quite sure if he was working under a contract or not, but this was going to be it for the Hitman, his big Canadian homecoming. Hard to believe that he had not been in front of a Canadian crowd once since his comeback on January 4th. So this was going to be a big night. And Bret comes out, of course, to start the show, gets a big reaction from the crowd, which I was happy to hear. Cuts an interesting promo. I marked out when he said that he had called WWF headquarters. I have these visions in my head of him calling WWF headquarters and trying to get Vince McMahon Sr. on the phone and somebody having to pat him on the back and say that, you know, Bret, Vince Sr. isn't alive anymore and neither is the WWF. But who cares? Bret cut a pretty good promo. Chris Jericho came out. This is the first time I think Jericho and Bret Hart have ever been face-to-face in the ring together. And it's pretty good for what it was. Jericho's always great. And he was able to get the crowd to turn against him. You got a big pop, too, coming out. So, of course, Bret was going to back out of the match with The Miz. And Jericho was able to work some of his magic and ultimately got Bret to change his mind. Bret's not one to back down from a fight. He said, you know what, tell The Miz that we're on. We're going to have a no disqualification match, or it would become no disqualification later on. And good stuff. You know, Bret, I'm happy that Bret was able to get out there and get that kind of reaction. You know, some of the cities he's been to in recent weeks, he's gotten some lukewarm appearances in certain places. Other places he gets a big reaction. And, you know, for the guy to make his first in-ring, in-arena appearance in Canada in something like 13 years in a WWE ring, it's a pretty big deal. And I was happy to see it. The comedy skits that we got all night, of course, we were having a commercial-free edition of Raw, except in Canada, ironically enough. And so basically they did a bunch of spoofs on real commercials. And you can make a point, you know, these guys are so unoriginal they can't come up with their own commercial concepts. And that's true. I wish they would. I think they could, you know, they could come up with some funny concepts on their own, I think, if they put their minds to it. But I tell you what, the one that I enjoyed the most was the first one. I'm a big fan of the Geico commercials anyway. So, you know, the Kali spoof where he's sitting in the car with Ranjan Singh and the car is real tiny and he could barely fit in there and Ranjan Singh's like, well, this is the only one that we could get. And then, of course, who pulls up in this gargantuan vehicle? I don't even know what it was. I don't know if it was a Hummer or what it was. Of course, Hornswoggle is in the driver's seat. And by the way, Hornswoggle really does drive. There's been a lot of people who have seen wrestlers leaving the building. And a couple of different times, people have sent in reports that you'd have a car with four or five wrestlers carpooling, and the person in the driver's seat was Hornswoggle. I'm not sure how that works. I don't know if there's some sort of foot pedal device or contraption, or if he sits on a phone book. I mean, he must sit on a phone book, but how does his feet reach the pedals? I don't know. But this was funny. And the Santino one later on, which was a spoof on a beer commercial, that was pretty funny too. The Goldust one, I think, had potential. I didn't really think that was that funny. And what was the other one? Oh, R-Truth one, which was a spoof off the MasterCard credit card commercials, whatever. The Kali one I laughed at, the other ones, not so much. If you were in Canada, by the way, and didn't get to see these, because in Canada you did have commercials, you didn't really miss much. And if you are that devastated, you can go on YouTube and check them out. Edge and Christian. I've gotten so many emails. Solomonster, Edge and Christian. What'd you think? Why would they give it away on free TV? Well, I don't know. This is a match that I could see happening. Even still, I could see this match happening at WrestleMania. I want to see more Edge and Christian, because what we got on Monday night was really good. The one thing that I was really disappointed in, I haven't heard anybody talk about this, but it pissed me off. And maybe the crowd, in their defense, was just mic'd poorly. Because a lot of people were writing in to SE Scoops and a lot of the other wrestling sites who were in attendance saying the crowd was hot all night. It was very noticeable to me during the Edge and Christian match how quiet it was at a lot of different points. And I'm not saying that people have to go completely nuts out of their minds for 15 straight minutes, but it was really, really quiet and noticeably so during what should have been a really exciting match for two reasons. Number one, Edge and Christian have been kept apart since Christian came back to the company. This is their first match, probably their first match since 2001. And they were in Canada. I mean, if you think back to the beginning of Raw, the first half hour, it was the all-Canadian show. You'd think these people would like that more, but I don't know. It just felt a little, the crowd was a little dull, but the match itself was really good, if not a little bit short. Edge picks up the win, which he had to, since he has a big pay-per-view match this Sunday at Over the Limit with Randy Orton, so no issues there. Orton pops up on the big screen and says, and by the way, this was part of a gimmick where each one of them would get to pick the other's opponent for the night, and Orton says, well, Christian wasn't the opponent that I picked for you. He jumped the gun. And, of course, The Undertaker comes out. And it was at this point, I first thought this when Christian came out. But when The Undertaker came out, as great as it was to see him, and he got a massive response, this was the part of the show that I shook my head and I said, what's the point of having a draft? I've gone on verbatim and ad nauseum about this for years now. And I am a big advocate, quite frankly, of putting as much star power as you could possibly muster on each one of these shows. But when you build up this annual draft, or two drafts a year, which they may have this year, what is the big deal when everybody just shows up on the other show anyway? I mean, I guess I get the fact that each wrestler has a quote-unquote home, like a home base, but it just defeats the entire purpose of having a brand split. You would be so much better off just mixing the brands. Have one giant WWE roster. You never know who's going to show up on what show. People don't have to show up on every show every week. I mean, it's kind of like the position TNA is in. They've got so many guys in only one show that you'll have a situation where maybe a guy shows up on Impact and doesn't show up again for another 2 or 3 weeks, which I think is a little much. But just end this fucking brand split already. My God, it's just a joke. You have a draft and you tell people, well, you know, after tonight, you know, the word backstage was that when the draft was over, we were going to see virtually no mixing of the brands. All they did leading up to the draft was mix the rosters. But when the draft was over, the word was no more of that. And that took, about 3 weeks before they changed their minds. Just pisses me off. I can't be pissed off too much, though, because it really was a good match. Hopefully we'll get more of that in the future. And a couple of words here about our beloved guest host, Buzz Aldrin. I wish he just would have buzzed off. I don't like when they bring in somebody who clearly has no product knowledge whatsoever. I think this was quite apparent in his first appearance backstage in that skit when Buzz Aldrin couldn't even remember the initials WWE. He said WW and then lost his train of thought. I mean, the guy's 80 years old, but, you know, then again, he's also going around punching people in the face, so hopefully he can take the criticism. Buzz Aldrin sucked. He was one of the poorer guest hosts that they've had. Not the worst. Flava Flav was worse. But not a big fan of Buzz Aldrin. Vicky Guerrero made a quick cameo. It's obvious that they are going to keep her away from that GM spot. They were tempted, even after what happened last week, to put her back in there permanently because of all the heat that she generated. But apparently they're going to go with somebody new. Next week, we're going to find out who the new guest host of Monday Night Raw is. I have no idea who it's going to be. I don't know if it's somebody they're going to bring back. I don't know if it's going to be Bret Hart. I don't think it will be. You know, Brett has said before that he doesn't see himself doing that. But then again, Brett once said that he can never see himself coming back and doing any sort of storyline. And certainly he changed his mind on that. I could envision a situation where, I know I'm getting ahead of myself here, but Brett, who is the new U.S. champion, perhaps shows up next week and surrenders the title in exchange for, you know, becoming the GM. To me, that would make no sense. You would think that whoever's being installed as a general manager, that, you know, Vince McMahon, you know, the chairman of the company, would have something to say about that. Why Bret Hart would become GM at the request of Vince McMahon, I don't know. So I don't know that that's the direction they're going in. I made a very flippant comment on Twitter like a week ago saying that they should just install a GM already, get rid of the guest host, just make Ricky Steamboat the GM. I am 99% sure that will never happen, but I think Ricky Steamboat would make a fine general manager. Wrestle a match every now and then, kick some butt. Plus, it's been a while since we've had a babyface authority figure on this show. Unless I'm just not remembering. You know, it's the heel authority figure is so cliched. I know Theodore Long on SmackDown is a babyface. He sucks, though, by the way. We need a new GM on both shows. We don't need any GMs. Enough with the GM concept. What happened to the days of President Jack Tunney? Anyway, we'll find out next week who the new GM is. I have no clue. I'm not even going to waste my time speculating because I don't even think they know who it's going to be yet. Hopefully by this weekend they'll make up their friggin' minds. Ted DiBiase came out, had a match with Yoshitatsu, who's awesome, by the way, and brings out the real Virgil, Mike Jones. Wrestling superstar Virgil. If you don't know what I'm talking about, do a Google search, a Google image search for Virgil, just three words, Virgil Wrestling Superstar. And you will see probably a batch of very depressing photos of Mr. Jones from the autograph circuit. It's been a lonely couple of years, so good for him that he can come back and get some exposure and I'm sure get a couple of paydays. He's going to be at the pay-per-view this Sunday in DiBiase's corner. I don't see this lasting very long. I'm sure Virgil will turn on him or vice versa at some point. But in the meantime, yeah, Virgil's back. Who would have thought? In 2010, speaking of 2010, let me just skip over to the Bret Hart stuff here for a second. Bret Hart, of course, comes out for his United States Championship match with The Miz. Miz is not very... Well, he doesn't trust Bret Hart. So he decides to make the match no DQ, which to me makes no sense. If I'm the champion, why would you want a no DQ match? Hell, if I'm the champion, fuck it. Just get in there, get yourself disqualified, get yourself counted out. But no, he makes it a no DQ match, which of course only works to Bret's advantage. Hart Dynasty come out, they do some brawling with Kozlov and Regal, who were the hired assassins by The Miz to kind of watch out for the Hart Dynasty. A lot good that did. APA they are not. Chris Jericho comes out, and Natalya gets in the ring to help her uncle. She slaps The Miz, or rather, she slaps Jericho. Goes to slap The Miz. The Miz stops it. Bret punches The Miz, and I don't know what happened at this point to Natalya. I guess she ran away. She's a girl, after all. Anyway, Miz and Jericho get the better of Bret Hart, and of course, anytime Bret gets involved in something physical, knowing the fact that you can't touch his head, I get a little queasy. And I have to say, you know, the Hart Dynasty came back at one point, and Miz was going to put the sharpshooter on Bret Hart. And Tyson Kidd came off the ropes with a springboard dropkick, and I gasped. I mean, I was convinced from that angle that they were showing it on TV, I was convinced that Tyson Kidd was going to land right on top of Bret Hart and kill the poor guy. Thankfully, he did not. Bret Hart got up. And unlike WrestleMania, where he teased it and teased it and teased it until the people just did not give a shit anymore, he actually went for the sharpshooter right away. Miz tapped. I think he tapped a little too quickly, but whatever. I would have milked it a few more seconds. But Miz taps out right away. Crowd goes nuts. Bret Hart, 5 times United States champion. Bret so excited he grabs the title and goes to climb the ropes. And poor guy almost slipped and fell. Natalya caught him, kind of was pushing his body up against the ropes so he didn't fall. Bret didn't seem to care. He had a big fat smile on his face. He kissed the title, which is something you don't see very often these days. Bret used to do that all the time when he would when he was walking around as the champion and the match was going to start. He would surrender the title to the ref. He'd always kiss it because it meant so much to him. And He looked like he was having a blast, and why not? I mean, who would have ever thought, Brett himself, who would have ever thought that after everything he's been through and the layoff of all those years, mending fences with Vince McMahon, coming back, that he would end up being a champion again in WWE. And that he would be able to win the championship, albeit a United States championship, in his homeland of Canada. So, good on Bret Hart. He got one more special moment. His fans got one more special moment. I enjoyed this. You know, I know there were people disappointed that Bryan Danielson was not a part of this. I guess, you know, the next night on NXT, we found out why. They have other plans for Bryan. Or is it Daniel still? I'll get to that in a second. But I love this. This was good stuff. And, you know, The Miz, look, The Miz is not hurt by this. He'll get the belt back. And even if he doesn't, you know, couple of weeks, people aren't going to care. It was a feel-good moment. The Miz will be just fine. Hell, if I'm The Miz, Miz is probably feeling like $1 million right now because he grew up a wrestling fan. He had to scratch and claw his way into the business. He was a reality show geek. Nobody really thought he'd ever make it. He proved them all wrong. He's a success story, but he's also a wrestling fan. And if you're The Miz, who would have ever thought that you'd be in the ring defending a title against Bret the Hitman Hart? That's got to be pretty cool. So anyway, Bret is not going to defend the championship, by the way. There will be no pink and black. You can give that up. He didn't come out in it last night. He's not coming out in it next week. He's not wrestling any matches either. My guess is he'll be stripped or he'll forfeit the title. Because, again, I'm not even sure he's going to be making that many more appearances. He almost has to be on Raw next week, at least. But I guess we'll see where they go with it. It's just funny, though, and I mentioned this on my Twitter. In 2010, not only do we have Virgil back on TV, Bret Hart is the United States champion, and Kevin Nash and Scott Hall, the outsiders in TNA, are tag team champions. In 2010, that's pretty damn sure sad. Now, like I said, I enjoyed the Bret Hart thing for what it was, but the fact is, Bret Hart obviously has no business being with a wrestling title, no matter how shitty the U.S. title may be in that company. Let's be honest, that title doesn't mean shit. But, you know, I understand why they did it. It's a feel-good moment, and I don't expect that Bret will be champion more than a week. Or he'll just retire. Maybe they're going to retire the belt. I don't know. It's a little bit different than TNA in that Kevin Nash and Scott Hall are pretty much full-time active wrestlers who are tag champs and are going to continue to be tag champs for a while. They're defending the titles. They look terrible. It's just, you know, there's a difference there. But still, spade's a spade. There's something wrong when Bret Hart is holding a title and the Outsiders are holding titles in 2010. You know, at some point we have to let that go. Just move on. Give people an opportunity. You know, I mean, this would be the equivalent. Think about this for a second. This would be the equivalent. During the Attitude Era, when all these guys were big stars or they were becoming big stars, Hall and Nash, of course, running around in the NWO, Bret Hart at his peak of popularity, although for all the wrong reasons, after Montreal. All these other guys, Shawn Michaels, Kurt Angle, The Undertaker, Steve Austin, The Rock. It would be the equivalent of Bruno Sammartino or Don Morocco, Dino Bravo, although he was dead, so that would have been a little difficult. But one of those guys, you know, being on Raw, or being on Nitro every week and being a champion and trying to relive their glory days and being pushed like main eventers 10 or 12 years after their usefulness ran out. You know, I think these guys have something to contribute in some cases. You know, Bret Hart, for example, I think he's done a fine job since he's come back, given his limitations. Kevin Nash, for all the crap people talk about him, and rightfully so, if I were running TNA, I would not necessarily fire Kevin Nash. I think Nash could be very useful. I think Nash is a very funny guy. Maybe he'd make a great manager, a great commentator. He's a shitty wrestler. He was a shitty wrestler when he was younger, and he's a shitty wrestler now. But, you know, really? Tag team champions? Come on. Anyway, that was my little mini rant right there. And again, it goes both ways. TNA's doing it, and WWE's doing it. Even though I liked what they did, it's still kind of wrong to have these guys running around with championship belts. We had a women's match. Nothing major really happened. Maryse is still hot. The grass is green, the sky is blue. Randy Orton and Jack Swagger. Jack Swagger, that's the best Edge could do. They had an okay match. I didn't really care much. I did notice Orton came out without his wrist tape. I'm not sure what the significance behind that is. Maybe somebody played a rib on him backstage. I don't know. Edge came out. It degenerated into just a bunch of nonsense. Swagger avoided being defeated, which is good because he's the world champion, and he's already been beaten clean by Randy Orton. So at least they didn't beat him, but he did get laid out with an RKO, and then Orton turned around and got speared. And at that point, the fans finally began booing Edge. So that sets up their pay-per-view match this Sunday, and I guess I don't know that anything else of any great significance really happened. We did have some bullshit with Buzz Aldrin, and he was terrible. Evan Bourne had a match with Ryder, the woo-woo guy, whatever he's being called these days. And anyway, John Lovitz will be your guest host on Raw next week. Yes, the critic will be your guest host next week. I suppose that has the potential to be funny, but again, just end the concept already. I mean, it just... Enough. Once a month. We don't need it every week. John Cena and Sheamus in the main event. They had a pretty good match for what it was. Miraculously, they kept billing all night that Sheamus has yet to be beaten by Cena. Cena can't beat Sheamus, they said, and he didn't beat him tonight either. Sheamus got dumped out of the ring, landed pretty hard on the floor after an FU, and Cena turned around and got beaten up by Batista. Batista put him in his Rings of Saturn-esque submission hold, and John Cena didn't tap. And that, I think, is one of the big problems going into this show. Does anybody in the world honestly believe that John Cena will say the words, "I quit," this Sunday? I mean, really, for all the talk about how WWE changed their minds on the Mysterio Punk stuff when, you know, they took away the stipulation that they were going to go with for WrestleMania. And again, for Extreme Rules, where if Rey lost, he'd lose his mask, and they decided against doing it because they didn't think people would buy that. They didn't think people would really think Mysterio was going to lose his mask. So they decided to go in a different direction. Well, don't they realize that nobody in the world believes that John Cena will ever say the words, "I quit"? I mean, Batista's going to have a tape recording of him saying it, a la Rockin' Mankind, at the 99 Royal Rumble, and then play it over the loudspeaker. That's about the only way Batista's going to win this match on Sunday, which basically means he's not. Which means your main event is awfully predictable, and it's not even like it's the first time these two guys are having a match. It's the third or fourth match now between these two guys. You know what the outcome is not going to be. Why would I pay money to see that match this Sunday? Not saying they won't have a good match, but this pay-per-view is not doing much for me. So, that was Raw. I enjoyed it overall. Not everything was great, but there was some really good stuff in there. It was definitely a step up from recent weeks. And a shame, because the rating did not reflect that. Raw popped a 3-4 on Monday night. Compare that to the 4-5 they did last summer for the very first commercial-free Raw. That was with the Donald Trump angle, which also had a lot of potential. And, of course, they fucked it up. So, yeah, Raw not doing too well on the ratings. And they can't blame TNA either, because they don't have that as an excuse. Now, let's talk a little bit about NXT here. This is not a show that I normally review, nor do I watch it every week. I decided to watch NXT. I was obviously very impressed by Mr. Ryan Danielson's promo last week after he was eliminated. And since he didn't show up on Raw, I figured I should probably watch this show because maybe he'll be on the show and I can watch him. And then I read some of the spoilers beforehand and I said, I have to watch this fucking show. Now, I went to the gym and I was praying I would make it back in time, and thankfully I did. This show, of course, it's an abortion. It's a lame duck. They're going to end it early, a little earlier than they had originally anticipated. They've whittled it down to like four or five guys. There really isn't much to it. I watched the show. I enjoyed the pros poll stuff. All the wrestlers sitting on stage giving their opinions. It's kind of like half shoot, half work. You know, some of them were just hilarious. I think it was a Punk or somebody at one point made a comment, I think, about Matt Hardy's fat belly, which... That's great, because it's true. Anyway, fast forward to the middle of the show here, because that's really all that matters. Michael Tarver comes out to the ring, along with Daniel Bryan. Yes, they were still calling him Daniel Bryan. I guess, as long as he's on NXT, they should call him Daniel Bryan, but here's the thing. My impression watching this last night, and I could be completely wrong about this, was they just decided to change their minds with like they do with everything else. Because last week, they had him referring to himself as Bryan Danielson, his real name, and basically saying that Daniel Bryan was dead. You know, I don't know what that guy's going to be doing, but I know that Bryan Danielson... And yet, there was no mention of Bryan Danielson. They called him Daniel Bryan. I mean, look, a name's a name. If they're going to push the guy, that's great. That's all that matters. But make up your fucking mind. I mean, just call him what his real name is already. Now that the genie's out of the bottle, you can't go back to the way you were doing it before. So I hope that when he eventually moves on to Raw or SmackDown, and he's off NXT, he will ditch this NXT personality and just call himself Bryan Danielson. Tarver cut a promo. You know, he showed a little bit of fire, and then Matt Stryker cut him off and made him look like a fool. And then Danielson cut a promo. And this is what I've talked about this so much. I mean, he's so good. And people just haven't... And I shouldn't say people. I mean, a lot of people know what he's all about. They've seen him wrestle before, Ring of Honor and elsewhere. But there's a lot of people who watch WWE, young people, who have no fucking clue about Bryan Danielson's background. And all they've seen of him is what they see on NXT, which is a shame. And I think now people are finally beginning to realize this guy's pretty good. And in fact, he's more than just good. It was kind of funny because when he was bantering back and forth with The Miz, all the other pros were sitting on stage. And at one point, Regal was almost interrupting the promo. He was almost talking out of turn because everyone was talking over each other. And The Miz was saying, you know, you think you're such hot shit, yet, you know, you haven't done anything to prove yourself. And Regal interjected and said to The Miz, and mind you, Regal also is a heel, much like The Miz, and he said, Miz, you know, he actually is better than you, because he is. So he cut a really good promo, very full of fire and rage, and told Matt Stryker basically to shut the fuck up. And then he turned his attention to Michael Cole, and he was going on and on about the politics behind the scenes, and Vince McMahon likes bigger people, and he heard about the politics behind that curtain. It was a work shoot, a lot similar to what Joey Styles did years ago on Raw when he left the announce booth. And he turned his attention to Michael Cole, who, of course, was acting all tough, and he stood up. And Danielson got out of the ring, and he confronted him, and he said, you say I have no personality because I'm a vegan, because I don't watch TV. And then he starts yelling. He goes, I have more personality in my little finger than you have in your entire body. He called him a poor man's JR, which he absolutely is. And then he started to slap the shit out of Michael Cole. Now, when I first read the spoilers, I was thinking this is going to be an epic beatdown. It was not an epic beatdown. If you want to see an epic beatdown of Michael Cole, all you got to do is go to YouTube and just Google, or go to YouTube and just search for the SmackDown beating from years ago. This would have been back during the Alliance days when Austin was the main heel in 01. And there was one particular episode of SmackDown where Steve Austin just beat the shit. I mean, this was a really stiff beating that he gave Michael Cole. And Austin's actually talking... I mean, Austin has a Twitter page now. He's fucking yapping nonstop on that Twitter page. And he's answered questions from people. And people have asked him about that. And Austin has said that, you know, he didn't complain once. He took it like a champ. I had to make it stiff. I had to make it look real. He was really beating the crap out of Michael Cole, and it was almost to the point of it being uncomfortable. So this didn't quite match the level of that Steve Austin beatdown from years ago, but still, you know, to see anybody slapping Michael Cole around, knocking him on his ass, embarrassing him, just brings such tears of joy to my face. Put a smile on my face, I'll say that. The best episode of NXT I've ever seen. And I'm curious to see where this leads. Michael Cole was still there when they came back after the commercial. Obviously, he was all riled up. And then at one point in the middle of the match that they had, after the segment, he just decided, he goes, you know what, I'm pressing charges. I got to go address this. I got to go. And he threw down the headset and he left. And Josh Matthews was doing commentary by himself. Eventually, Cole came back, unfortunately. But really good stuff. And I'm curious to see where it goes. I mean, are they positioning Danielson as a heel? What does this mean for Michael Cole? We heard Michael Cole on Raw Monday night after Bret Hart's U.S. title win. He was heeling on Bret Hart. Now, my impression of that was Vince McMahon just being petty. You know, Vince McMahon has made amends with Bret Hart. He's given him a lot. You know, he welcomed Bret back with open arms. Bret beat the shit out of Vince with that shit. Maybe this was Vince's revenge for all those chair shots, those stiff chair shots at WrestleMania. Maybe it was just Vince telling Michael Cole, who's sometimes heelish on NXT, but he's never that way on Raw. And it wasn't like he was saying the stuff about Bret Hart, and it was kind of a theme for the rest of the show where Cole was being a little more aggressive. No, I mean, he was basically almost playing the role of heel announcer, trashing Bret Hart and how Bret Hart had a cheat and he needed help from all these people. Is that honorable? Do you really think The Miz deserved this? And then he was right back, you know, the next segment for the rest of Raw to being the usual Michael Cole. So that tells me that this is not the start of a Michael Cole heel turn. That was just Vince McMahon being a dick and just trying to get one last dig in at Bret Hart, even after all the good stuff that he's done for him, just trying to make Bret look like a pussy, but thankfully that didn't work. So anyway, really good stuff on NXT. I watched the rest of NXT after that. It really wasn't bad. I don't know, you know, I don't know if it's just knowing that it's coming to an end soon. You know, Darren Young got eliminated at the end of the show. I swear to God, and I know I'm not the only one who thinks this, he looks like John Cena. I mean, he has got to be a white guy wearing blackface. I'm sorry. He just has to be. He looks, you know, he could pass for somebody like from the Jersey Shore just with one of those really bad dark tans. He does not look like a black guy. He just does not. I don't think he is. I refuse to believe that he is. So he's gone, and we're down to Wade Barrett, Heath Slater, Justin Gabriel, and David Otunga. I have no doubt that it will be Wade Barrett or David Otunga winning. You know, they're very high on Otunga. They're high on Barrett, too. He's shown a lot, but Otunga, they've just been high on from the beginning because of his look and because of the Jennifer Hudson connection. He's married to a celebrity, and so they think they could leverage that. I said when he guest-hosted Raw all those weeks ago, I didn't think he didn't blow me away or anything, but I said on this podcast, I said that I thought Otunga was really good. He had a presence about him. You know, he didn't stumble over his words. He didn't seem nervous. He was a personality, is what he was. He had a presence about him, like a star-like presence. So he's got that going for him. It's too bad he's a shitty wrestler. He doesn't know how to work. You would hope that he could learn over time, but he's been in developmental for a while now, and he's been on NXT for 12 weeks now, or whatever it's been, and he doesn't seem to really get any better in the ring. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. But that was my thoughts on NXT, a rare NXT review here on the Sound Off. Couple of other quick notes here. I don't want to go on too long with this podcast. Just wanted to get to the good stuff. Beth Phoenix underwent surgery on her ACL. This would have been, I believe, yesterday in Birmingham with the renowned Dr. James Andrews. Apparently everything went great. It's going to be about 5 or 6 months before she comes back, so lots of luck with that. Jim Ross announced earlier in the week, unfortunately, the closing of his restaurant, JR's Barbecue in Norman, Oklahoma. He used to have a second restaurant that closed years ago. This was the original one, and I guess, you know, it's very difficult to break into the restaurant business. Ask anybody anywhere in the country about that. I think I read a stat that said something to the effect of only about 30% of new businesses in the restaurant industry actually survive, I think, longer than 5 years or something like that. It's rough. You know, it used to perform very well, and times are tough, and in the restaurant industry, times were always tough, and so now they're tougher. And I guess it just didn't make any financial sense to keep it open. It must have sucked for him to do that, to have to lay off a whole bunch of people, but his online business, I guess, is continuing, so if you want your barbecue sauce, you can go there. And apparently he's going to be making some sort of decision probably within the next week or two on his professional future. We've been hearing, you know, this has been dragging out for months now, but apparently it's just about D-Day for Jim Ross. He has to decide, as he said in his own blog, whether to fish or cut bait. It's basically, you know, shit or get off the pot. Make a decision here. Are you staying with WWE or not? You know, his talent contract ran out with them, so he's still technically an office employee. He does payroll for them. He scouts talent. I think he still submits reports weekly to them with his thoughts on the TV shows, or at least he used to. And that's all fine and good, but that's not all that he wants to do. And with WWE, you're either all in or you're not. You can't keep doing that and then go work for an MMA organization or go work for TNA. You got to do one or the other. So he wants to announce, whether it's wrestling or MMA, he wants to announce. And if Vince McMahon is not going to bring him back as an announcer, then I have a feeling this is it. He's probably on his way out. unless they reach some sort of agreement, or this is part of some hush-hush angle where they're going to replace Michael Cole, which would be fantastic, but I just don't see that happening. This is probably, you know, his career in WWE is probably winding down in the next week or two, and I guess we'll just have to wait and see what his final decision is. I know he's working on a book. He's submitted samples of some kind to a major speakers bureau so he can be a public speaker. He will not have a shortage of things to keep occupied with, and he's made a lot of money. He'll be fine, but it's just a shame. It really is. You know, when Bret Hart won the U.S. title on Monday night, the place went nuts. It was really a raw moment, and I felt this is a moment Jim Ross should have been here for. He would have been orgasmic during that segment. Think about it. Bret Hart, 12 years out of WWE, everything with Montreal, he finally comes back to the company. He's been back now off and on for 5 months, and Jim Ross missed the entire Bret Hart return. We didn't get to hear him call one segment or one match involving Bret the Hitman Hart, his entire comeback run. There's just something inherently wrong, just like Shawn Michaels' last match, presumably, with The Undertaker at WrestleMania, a match that he should have called. You know, and Jim Ross is sitting up in a skybox somewhere. He's in Phoenix, not calling the main event of WrestleMania, not calling Shawn Michaels' final match. There's just, to me, it's a slap in the face, and if I were him, as he says, I would cut bait, get the hell out of there, and just do whatever makes you happy. Come join me. There's always a spot for Jim Ross here on The Sound Off as my co-host. All right, so let's get to some of the letters from you guys. Open up the mailbag here, the special weekday edition of The Sound Off. Sean Sager is a new writer. Actually, no, he sent letters to us before. Sean wants to know, if I could take any match and change the announce team in that match, what would that be, and who would my two- or three-man announce team be? Well, being that I just talked about this, I would love to have had Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler calling WrestleMania 26 as main event this year. Beyond that, I think Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan in today's era, I think it could have worked. And I think they really would make it, it would make it more enjoyable to listen to a match. Not just because they were very good at what they did, but the dynamic of having the babyface announcer and the heel announcer is something that we really don't have anymore. It's just a different direction that Vince McMahon wanted to take his product in. And even TNA, you know, Mike Tenay and Taz are pretty much one and the same. You know, they agree with a lot with one another. They don't really argue too much or banter back and forth. You know, which is fine, but it's just we don't have that dynamic anymore. And for a Monsoon Heenan combo, for example, in today's era, I think would make the product far more interesting. I really do. Ash from Australia writes in, been a listener since episode 50. Not 60, 50. His question, do I know the masked attacker for the Straight Edge Society? Who is this person? Well, this person is Joey Mercury. You might remember him from Eminem. He had some substance abuse issues. Left the company for a while. He's been rehired. He was actually rehired a little while ago. And unlike Lance Cade, who was rehired and then fired without even being used, they're actually starting to use him. He's the guy under the mask, which is kind of ironic because he actually is somebody who had, you know, this addiction to pills and drugs, and he's been saved by the Straight Edge Society. So there's an element of realism to it if they ever decide to reveal who he actually is. He also mentions here, after listening to Sound Off 109 from this past weekend, I heard you, Solomon Monster, saying how many title matches Batista has been in since 2005, wanting to know the number. I worked it out, and it comes out to 34, including Over the Limit this Sunday against John Cena. So there you go. I know a couple of people sent in emails to me, so I thank everybody who did. Ash says the number is 34. I say that's ridiculous. Not that it's wrong, just that the fact that he's gotten 34 championship matches on pay-per-view in the last 5 years is just completely fucking asinine. And like I said, I would love to see these naked photos he has of somebody in the company, because I, for the life of me, cannot understand how somebody can get 34 title shots on pay-per-view in 5 years. And he hasn't won the title that many times. I guess he has, but he hasn't been all that successful. I think his batting average is not too great considering all the title matches, and I don't think this Sunday is going to help that. I don't see him walking away with the championship. AJ writes in, the phenomenal one. Dear Solemn Monster, love your show. Been a fan since the very first episode. I wanted to ask you a question about the Hall of Fame. Do you think WWE should induct Bad News Brown into the Hall of Fame? He was in a couple of WrestleManias. Most remember for his win in the Battle Royal at WrestleMania 4. The only time I've ever heard Bad News' name all these years mentioned was on ECW a couple of years back from the lips of Matt Stryker when he was talking about Tyson Kidd's training in Stu Hart's dungeon. That would have also been before Matt Stryker was neutered on commentary by Vince McMahon and was barred from saying shit like that. That was Solemn Monster's note there. Let's see here. Anyway, AJ wants to know, what does WWE have against Bad News? It seems like they have bad blood with him, no pun intended. Would you know why they hate him so much, or if they do? I don't think they hate him. At least I'm not aware of any sort of, edict banning the mention of Bad News Brown's name. The thing about Bad News is, he was a tough guy, and, some people would say he was a bit of an asshole. Other people would say he was a pretty good guy when you got to know him. I know he was a judo expert, legit. You know, he was a legit tough guy, but he wasn't in WWE that long. I mean, he came into the company, I guess it would have been late 87, early 88. WrestleMania 4 was the first appearance I could remember of him. I know before that he was, in the Stampede promotion up in Canada, but that would have been when he came into WWF. And I believe he was gone in 1990. Would have probably been the fall? I want to say the fall of 1990, because the last appearance of his that I can remember was SummerSlam 90. And I don't... All of a sudden, his opponent jumps out of my head. I believe it was Jake the Snake. And Jake was, obviously he would bring the snake to the ring, and Bad News had this giant rat, this sewer rat, this New York City sewer rat, supposedly, that he would bring to the ring with him. So, pretty sure that was SummerSlam 90. I could be completely wrong about that. But, if nothing else, I know that he had that infamous match with Roddy Piper that year at WrestleMania, where Piper painted himself half black. And I know for a fact that Bad News did not know he was going to do that, and was pissed off about it, too. They were a little stiff with each other in that match that night. So his run wasn't that long. He had, greater success and notoriety outside of WWE, which has never stopped them from inducting other people into their Hall of Fame. I just don't think that it's a priority for them right now. They're running out of big names to put in there. And I think Bad News Brown, compared to the other guys that still have not been put in, is low on the totem pole. That's not to say that in 3 or 4 years he may not go in, but do I see him going in anytime soon? No. Is it because there's bad blood there? I don't think so. I don't know of any. And quite frankly, a lot of guys that Vince McMahon has had bad blood with are in the Hall of Fame right now. Eventually, he lets bygones be bygones. He's made up with everybody. He's made up with Billy Graham, although now they're back on bad terms. But, the Road Warriors, you could just run the list. I mean, everybody except Randy Savage, who, congratulations, by the way, to the Macho Man. I saw the note. If you go to MachoMan.com, he has a wedding photo up there. Apparently, Macho Man just got married for the second time, so congratulations to him. He looks an awful lot like Epic Beard Man from YouTube, the guy that, the old man that beat the shit out of that black kid on the bus. Actually, I shouldn't even say kid. The guy was 50 years old. Yeah, that's another video for you guys, by the way, to YouTube. Epic Beard Man. And you will be entertained. Got a letter here from Daniel in London, England. Been listening since Sound Off 88. He was listening to last weekend's show. Wanted to confirm that all UFC pay-per-views are broadcast for free in the UK if you receive ESPN. So there you go. I also wanted to know, what do you think of Orlando Jordan's bisexual gimmick? I don't like it. It doesn't do anything for me. I have nothing against the guy. I know that he's legit, bisexual, and so they've turned it into a gimmick, but they've turned it into a heel gimmick. So, if I were bisexual, for example, or if I were gay, and I'm not that there's anything wrong with that, but I might be a little peeved that this guy is going on TV exploiting that and trying to get people to hate his guts. Because, you know, and think of the TNA fan base, for crying out loud. I mean, these are the kind of people that will come to that show and want to lynch the poor guy. And they're exploiting that, and they know that. The guy comes out, he pours milk on himself, he's grabbing people's crotches. Why would I like that? As a young adult male, or at least I like to think of myself as a young adult male, why would I want to watch a TV show where this guy is coming out to the ring, grabbing the crotches of other men? I mean, I know Goldust did it with Razor Ramon back in 95, and for that time, that was really risque. I was a bit younger. I don't remember my first impression of Goldust. I thought he was a bit disturbing. But I was, you know, I was not of the age to analyze that the way that I am now. The gimmick doesn't do anything for me. He's a pretty decent wrestler, which is kind of the shameful part of it. I would like for them to find a role for him. I don't think this is the right one. And then, of course, there's the talk of Chris Kanyon. If you don't know that whole story, this was a gimmick that Chris Kanyon proposed this gimmick. Not this exact gimmick, but he proposed this gimmick to WWE and had sent a letter to Stephanie McMahon several years ago that I guess he never got an answer to. He wanted to come in. He wanted to come back and essentially be the first openly gay wrestler. But it wouldn't have been his gimmick. You know, he wouldn't have gone around being the gay wrestler. It just, he would have been Chris Kanyon, who just so happens to be gay and okay with that. And that essentially is what he wanted to come back and do. And WWE obviously didn't respond and didn't have any interest in that. And there's been some talk, and there's no way of knowing for sure, but, you know, Kanyon, of course, who died a few months ago, not even, was very depressed. And people who were close to him suggest that when he saw the Orlando Jordan gimmick pop up on TNA, it really kind of threw him over the edge because he felt that his gimmick, his idea that he had cultivated had been stolen. And there are people who think that the reason he ended up killing himself essentially was because of TNA, because of he saw this on TNA television. Some people are saying TNA killed Chris Kanyon. I would not go so far as to say that, but there are people who suggest that was the reason. That was what pushed him over the edge. So there's nothing positive so far that's come out of this gimmick. I don't like it. It doesn't do anything for me, and this is certainly not a way that you're going to get young males, if that's what they want, watching your TV show. Night Owl writes into the show here with a lot to say. I'll take a snippet here. His question is for the listeners, all you people listening to this podcast right now. How many of you actually save the sound off that they get their question heard and listen to it more than once? So in other words, if you've had your question answered on this show before, how many of you actually save that show because your question was asked? I'm sure plenty of people do that. Apparently Night Owl is one of those people, likes to hear his name mentioned. Also, he would think, this goes back to something that somebody asked me a couple of weeks ago on the podcast. Night Owl here thinks that the WWE contracts work much the way the NFL contracts do, where the team has to pay that person for the rest of the year if they get fired. A great person to think of about this is the Kansas City Chiefs, who released Larry Johnson, and the Bengals getting him because the Chiefs were paying for him and the Bengals only had to pay a little bit for him. Anyway, you may well be right about that. I've asked other people their thoughts on this, and they seem to think that. I think I had said that they don't get paid. At least that was my impression. In fact, I believe they do. So if Evan Bourne, God forbid, were to be fired tomorrow and he had 8 months left on his contract, he's likely getting paid for those 8 months, and certainly, unless they gave him an early release, would not be allowed to wrestle anywhere else until that contract, were to actually expire. So that sheds a little bit more light on the subject. But ultimately, nobody really knows because WWE has a lot of very interesting clauses inserted into their contracts. Let's just say that much. I remember listening to a wrestler who did an interview. I don't remember where it was. And I don't remember who it was even. But he had worked for WWE and was given a contract to sign. And he wanted his lawyer to go over the contract. WWE was not very happy about this. They wanted him to sign the contract and get it back, and of course that's crazy. If you are given a contract, especially one that is multiple pages, you want to read it over or have somebody who knows what they're doing read it over before you sign your life away. And as the story goes, he had his lawyer look the contract over, and the lawyer said to him, you'd have to be fucking crazy to sign this thing. I mean, there's so many clauses and weird things stuck in here. He had never seen anything like that before in his life. So who really knows at the end of the day what these WWE contracts look like? I think Raven posted a copy of an old WWF contract online one day, and I had saved it. I don't think I retained it. Actually, maybe I did. Let me take a look here. Let's see. I might still have a copy of this. He had posted a copy of a contract that was from several years ago, probably like 2000, 2001. It was a WWF. Here it is. I still have it. He had posted it and then took it down, and I was fortunate enough to have saved the PDF before it was taken down. It's World Wrestling Federation Entertainment Booking Contract. This PDF document here is 25 pages long. You have a booking section. Let's see here. Intellectual property section, merchandising, exclusivity, payments and royalties. Everything is outlined in here. There's so many different articles. 25 pages worth in this PDF document. It just goes on and on. Look at this. Here we go. Early termination. Look at this. How about that? Early termination. Here we go. This is straight from a WWF contract, by the way. This is from the year 2000. I'll just go through this real quick. This agreement may be terminated by the promoter during the term for any reason whatsoever by providing wrestler 90 days advance written notice of said termination. This agreement may also be terminated prior to the end of its term by a written instrument executed by each of the parties expressing their mutual consent to terminate without any further liability on the part of either. In the event of such early termination, the promoter shall pay the wrestler for all uses of the intellectual property in accordance with paragraphs, blah, 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 blah. This agreement will be terminated by wrestler's death during the term. Well, that's morbid. With no further compensation due to the wrestler's heirs, successors, personal representatives, or assigns. And last but not least, upon the termination of this agreement for any reason, including breach, the parties acknowledge and agree that promoter shall own all right, title, and interest in all works, new intellectual property, and any registrations thereof. And the promoter shall have the exclusive right to sell or otherwise dispose of any materials, goods, merchandise, or other items, blah, blah, blah. So there you go. That's the early termination section. How about that? Almost forgot that I had that. Hopefully that doesn't exactly answer your question, but that sheds some more light on what a WWF contract looks like, at least as of 10 years ago. And this is a matter of public record, by the way. It was posted online. Mickey writes in, Solomon's from a big fan of Sound Off back to episode 1. I wanted to ask, did the Macho Man and Undertaker ever wrestle each other? Yes, they did. I don't remember what the event was. I'm pretty sure it was at a TV taping or it was a dark match from a TV taping. I know they had at least one match, because I remember, buying the old WWF magazines, and there were photos, or there was one photo at least, of Macho Man. He was wearing the long tights. They were, I think, red and white, and he had the Undertaker by the hair, and it looked like Savage was almost in mid-jump. He used to do this move where he would grab his opponent by the head and would leap over the top rope, which, of course, was incredibly stupid for him to do every night for years and years, because it did nothing. It certainly didn't do any good for his knees, but he was in mid-flight with The Undertaker in the middle of a match, so they did at least have one match. Let's see, this letter comes from Alex, dear Solomonster. Been listening since Sound Off 100. You asked us to brainstorm last weekend on what kind of shows the new WWE Network might possibly air, and I have a few ideas. Number one, something like MTV Cribs, where we get to see the WWE superstars' homes. Cartoon show for the kiddies starring John Cena, maybe something similar to G.I. Joe. It's funny you mention that. WWE, from what I understand, without giving too much away, could very well be going in that direction. Let's just say that much. And his personal favorite here would be Late Night with Santino Marella, a late night talk show starring Santino Marella, no shit, with Vladimir Kozlov as his angry sidekick. Well, we did hear for weeks and weeks that Santino was going to be filming a pilot of some kind for a WWE sitcom with Kozlov. They were going to be, I think, like roommates. I was incredibly intrigued by this, and I have not heard anything about this in recent weeks, so I don't know if they just completely scrapped the idea, if they did the show and it was so god-awful they don't want anybody to see it, or if they're just, you know, maybe it's in post-production. I don't know. It was supposed to be something for WWE.com, and they were going to see if an actual network would pick it up. I haven't heard anything. I'm going to try to find out more about that, because I think that would be very, very cool. By the way, when I mentioned this on the Sound Off last week, and I really what I meant was I figured people would write in with funny ideas. It seemed like Alex was being serious here, which is fine. If you have serious ideas, that's just fine too. But I, you know, I figured people would probably write in with some comical ideas for shows that WWE would probably want to put on that network. So if you've got your own thoughts, feel free to email them to thesolomonster@gmail.com. And on that note, Craig writes in on the same subject to say that how about WWE Summerfest on the new network? It's a little like SummerSlam, but it's a fest. Very good, Craig. Very original. Jeremy Piven would certainly watch that show. Mark in Newcastle, England wrote in also to answer the question about Big Dave and how many pay-per-view title matches he's gotten or defenses. He says it's over 40. It's at least 40. So we have one person who says 34. Another person says 40. So we have a range now. It's in the 34 to 40 range. we'll take the law of averages here on this. Either way, it's just far too many. So that's the moral of the story. Far too many title shots. And last question we'll get to here comes from Mr. A-Hole Anderson. Very cute. As I was reading a post about Linda McMahon on SCScoops.com, of course, this would be in regards to the big news that broke yesterday, where Linda, who of course is running for Senate in the state of Connecticut and faces a primary against a Republican challenger, so she has to first get the nomination before she can actually run for the Senate. But her campaign dug up a little bit of dirt on one of her Democratic opponents, who was pretty popular in the state, Richard Blumenthal, who apparently has been, if not lying, certainly misleading people about his supposed military record. He claimed he had, you know, served in Vietnam, and now we find out that he didn't actually serve. In fact, he actually got 5 or 6 deferments to avoid serving in Vietnam and ended up, I think, in the National Guard or something like that, military reserves, so that he can specifically avoid serving in Vietnam. So it's one thing to just kind of lead people to believe something but not explicitly say that you did something, so it's not really like you're lying. But when people find out that you actually did everything in your power to avoid doing what you claimed you did, that's a no-no. And it actually helped Linda. Her poll numbers went up a little bit. She's still a long shot for this thing, but she can certainly play the political game very, very well, which of course comes as a surprise to nobody considering the business that she comes from. And her husband, who perhaps helped her out a little bit with this, but that's just my speculation. Anyway, back to the question here. His question is, why does Linda want to be a senator? How can it benefit the McMahon family if she did become a senator? I thought you would have a very good point of view on this subject, and I'm sure your listeners would love to hear it. Well, it's actually quite an easy question to answer. Why would Linda want to be a senator? I mean, you'd have to ask Linda to get her exact answer, but yeah, you could think of a couple of different ones. First and foremost, there's a certain level of prestige that comes with it. It's like Vince McMahon, if he wanted to run for mayor of Stamford, Connecticut. Does he have to be the mayor of Stamford to be a powerful person? Of course not, but there would be a certain level of prestige. Of course, Vince, I'm sure, would not want to be the mayor. He would want to be the president, but and God help us all if that ever happened. The key thing to remember here, though, is why would she want to be a senator? There's a lot of power and influence. You know, again, their operations are based in Stamford, Connecticut. They have been going back to the 1980s. They are a staple in that town and in that state. And WWE already pays big money for people to lobby for them in Washington. And it's, I mean, every company does this. Every big company or entity has lobbyists lobbying for their cause on Capitol Hill. That's just the way it works. That's politics. Her just running for the Senate, even if she doesn't win, and I don't think she will, just her running, and she has said this herself, she has made and continues to make a lot of very, very important and potentially important political connections in this entire process. So she could spend $20 or $30 million in this campaign, and I think she said she's willing to spend as much as $50. If she loses, obviously she'll be disappointed, but I think in her mind it'll be worth it because of all the different connections that they're making, you know, which can only benefit WWE. There's some pretty powerful and influential people that Linda McMahon has befriended and is now working with, who, when this campaign is long over, whether she wins or not, you know, could come in very handy as far as World Wrestling Entertainment is concerned. And you never know when shit may happen. Look what happened with the Benoit stuff a couple of years ago. You know, that's exactly the type of situation. I mean, had congressional hearings gone forward, which of course they didn't, but it pays to have friends in high places. And if for no other reason, that alone, I think, is why Linda would certainly be more apt to want to run for political office. I think Vince would do the same thing if Vince wasn't so goddamn busy running a wrestling company. So as far as why would she want to do it, I think the answer is why wouldn't she? You know, why wouldn't she want to do it? I mean, she has the money to spend. Good for her. She can only, you know, make a lot of friends in the process, and I think she already has. How could it benefit the McMahon family? Well, like I just said, it may not benefit them right away, but it could benefit them down the road. Look at UFC. I mean, it's a little bit different, but UFC is still trying to get sanctioned in certain cities and countries in this world, especially in Canada, even in New York. I live in New York, and it is still illegal to have an MMA show at Madison Square Garden. The hope is that within the next year or two, UFC will have their first event here, but they have to get sanctioned first. But there are people in power who don't want to see that happen. They still have this view that mixed martial arts, it's like human cockfighting, it's inhumane, it doesn't belong in a place like Madison Square Garden, it doesn't belong in New York, which of course is a ridiculous, outdated view to have. But UFC has people who also will lobby for them, and it helps to have people who can kind of do your dirty work for you. And I think in the end, they'll get sanctioned because there's more people in favor of it than not, and there's people who are trying to talk to the right people and go through some back channels in order to get a deal done. You know, that's the sort of political stuff that goes on, and I think that's one of the reasons certainly why Linda would want to run for the Senate. So it only helps WWE in the long run, although, you know, is it fruitful for them to be spending up to $50 million on a losing campaign? That's a different story. So on that note, on that political note, that does it for episode 110, a very unexpected weekday edition of the Sound Off here on May 19th. TheSolomonster@gmail.com is the email address for any and all feedback. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Solomonster. You can subscribe to the podcast through the iTunes store. Don't be deceived by the word store. It is free. They say nothing good is free in this world, and I pretty much prove that wrong each and every week. So sign up there if you haven't already done so. There's probably a ton of people who don't expect this podcast to go up tonight who, if they had subscribed through iTunes, they'd have it delivered to them automatically. They'd wake up in the morning with a very big surprise. It'd be like Christmas morning for these people. In light of the fact that I'm doing a show here tonight, I don't know if there'll be a new one this weekend. This is a pretty busy weekend for me. I will be going to the WUW show. I talked about it last week. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to harp on it too much, but, you know, my buddy is wrestling again at the Johnny Rods WUW show, which is taking place in the city. I don't have the exact location in front of me this time, but you can go to WUWonline.com, look it up. I think tickets are $20. Come show your support for Amish cousin Simon. Should be a fun time. I got a lot of other stuff going on as well. I may actually be going to Madison Square Garden with a friend on Sunday for some sort of guided tour and taking a game. We might be able to shoot some basketball hoops on the court, so that could be kind of cool. If I do that, I'll certainly have a story to tell next week, but we'll see. Maybe we'll have time for a show. If not, you guys get one tonight. So on that note, be well, stay safe. If you have the time, do go on YouTube and do find the clip of Bryan Danielson, whatever you want to call him, beating the shit out of Michael Cole, and you can loop it and rewind it all day to your heart's content. I know I've already done that about 16 times, and I could not be happier. So on that note, We'll see you next week. Take it easy, guys.
You've been listening to The Sama Monster.
You know, I really just don't understand what they're doing.
Anybody agree with me out there? I mean, anybody. Come on, throw me a bone here.
Probably the single dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
God, I love this business. On SE Scoop.